the show that goes there. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Boy, do we have a lot to cover today, including 20-something different cases of Donald Trump being an obstructionist. Oh, we'll explore that and his meandering with the whole judicial system and how he hopes this will play up into a cohesive 2020 strategy. We have also got a lot more to cover, but before we get into any of it, I should probably introduce myself. Hi, I'm your host, a critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal insane. My name's Shaggy Jenkins. Joining me from a lovely part of West Texas where guns outnumber people, that is a actual statistic, please welcome Mr. Educator himself, Drew Landry.
Hey, I'm back.
You know, you always come in here like Jay-Z. It's like, guess who's Bizak? Okay. I got to tell you, Drew.
If only I was married to Beyonce, but anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't, have you heard the album Lemonade? Are you sure you want to be married to her?
I love her.
I mean, look, I'm just going to say there's only two people in this world I would never be married to because I'm afraid all of our arguments would turn into their albums. One is Beyonce. The other one's Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
That's why as soon as Beyonce got married and guys saw what Jay-Z was going through, Taylor Swift to this day remains single. Getting on to our story today, our main story has to do with President Donald Trump. Drew, there is over 20 different investigations into his finances, into his past finances, into his actions, his obstructionism, and just all kinds of facets of his administration. And it seems like, and I don't think I'm being facetious here when I say this, since the time of Richard Nixon, we have not seen a president more willfully and forcefully engaged in the act of engaging in executive privilege, of making sure that witnesses don't testify, of controlling the public narrative, of delegitimizing the media, and finally, of being an obstructionist. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. What we always have to remember here is that the relationship between Congress and the president, it ebbs and it flows. That's been the way since Washington. So what we have to really understand here is that Congress has several functions in its in what it does. And one of them is ever so important, and that's oversight. Not just of the bills that they pass, but also of the other institutions, in particularly the presidency. So them wanting to investigate the president or people of the executive branch, that's well within their confines to really do so. A sticking point that they have or that they often run into with presidents is, you know, sometimes presidents don't really want to cooperate with Congress when it comes to this, and so they'll invoke what's called executive privilege, meaning that they're just going to abstain from any type of investigation, and that includes the entire executive branch. And that's been that way really since Thomas Jefferson. So here's where we are when it comes to this president. The Democrats who are in charge of the House have subpoenaed various information from the executive branch, particularly the president, in dealing with his tax returns and trying to do other types of investigations, you know, trying to get McGahn from the White House counsel to come and testify about other issues. And the president has just essentially said, look, it's not going to happen, not going to do it. Even Steve Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary, has said, nope, I'm not going to release those tax returns. Those aren't really having anything to do with the legislative process or anything with that. The thing we have to understand is Congress doesn't owe any type of explanation to people of the executive branch why they're doing this. It's their implied oversight function that they have. I mean, that's well within their confines. That's written in Article 1 of the Constitution. I'm sorry that Article 2 doesn't like it, But this is the ongoing, you know, ebb and flow relationship that you have with Congress. The problem that we're seeing here is the number of investigations that the House wants to bring out and the number of times the president has said, nope, not going to do it. It's all just a bunch of BS. That's the frustration, and that's what we're seeing here. And the American people are rather confused about it. Democrats in the House are frustrated, and Trump is playing it up for 2020 re-election bid.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is that, and this is one of the most crucial parts to remember is, like yesterday on CNN, there was a Republican panelist, and thank God I can't remember his name, because if I started trying to remember all the Republican panelists, well, clearly I would need a life. Look, this is the thing, Drew. In that discussion, he had a little bit of a back and forth with the host where he said, look, this is what it really boils down to with this current political climate. What the president is doing right now is unprecedented. But is it illegal? No. If you are saying that pushing back against a political effort as what you see as a political effort being illegal, then no, that's not illegal. That's just us trying to use the optics of this publicly for the benefit of the Republicans. And when it comes to the tax return, it's a voluntary, now this is the part that you'll really love. It's a voluntary process, whether or not a president gives out their tax return. And so what? Yeah. You make it voluntary. And this one doesn't volunteer to do it. And sorry, if you don't like it, then that's the way the law works. Maybe you should make a new law and see if you can get it signed by this president.
So, yeah. Well, yeah, you make a very valid point there. You know, the Democrats, you know, they're trying to do something like this. They want to get access to the tax returns. I mean, even for the president and his family to sue the banks that could force over that type of information, that speaks a lot to, what is their true financial dealings and where does it go? And I think the American people deserve to really know that. But as you mentioned earlier, the optics of it using it for political gain is exactly what he did it in 2016. And he's wanting to use it again for 2020 because he believes that the people don't really care. That's one way to say that. But if you bring out what your tax returns are, how much you've made, how much you've lost, and what your dealings are, that's going to be a rather important part because, you know, the American presidency needs to be sold to the American public that, look, I may have done foreign dealings, but I have no entanglements with them, or I no longer am with that business and all that sort of thing. That's what tax returns can really do here. But the president, he didn't release them in 2016 because he said he was under audit. I have friends who work for the IRS who have told me that doesn't matter. You can still release your tax returns. So that doesn't make any difference whether you're audited or not. But he's turning this, and it's just what you mentioned earlier. He's turning this into a play in 2020 and say, hey, look, I can't get anything done with the Democrats because they're too busy trying to investigate me. I have to stand up to all this harassment. Send me back for four more years inside the White House.
But here's the thing, Drew. He is playing rather confidently. If you look at this weekend's news, he's playing rather confidently that he thinks the Democrats' efforts and the pushback against his administration will actually lead to a second term. And by that, I mean, let's look at his tough stance on China, where he says, if you don't like the deal now, you just wait till I get reelected. Yeah. It's almost like he's go ahead and just like the Chinese, because they're used to their leader always winning elections. I wonder why. Donald Trump is kind of giving him that same imagery here where he's saying, look, I'm going to get reelected too. This is the American dynasty, and we're going to come after you, China. So if you think it's bad now, just you wait.
Yep.
How much of his confidence is actually not misplaced in that statement?
Boy, that's a great question. I think it is in some regard. I think it's also misguided because, look, anything can happen in 2 years. I mean, you know, we were, you know, talking before the show about, you know, George H.W. Bush. In 1991, there was never a president who had more approval than him. I mean, after you know, kicking Saddam out of Kuwait, there wasn't another president who had more approval rating, higher approval rating than George H.W. Bush. It was over 90%. And then what happens? Well, the economy tanks down, and his campaign is not really with it to want to run again, doesn't have it in him, and so they meet this charismatic governor, and he's not reelected. And by the time that 1992 rolls around, his approval ratings are so terrible. That's exactly what could happen here with this president in the next year and a half. His approval ratings are not really all that high, let's be honest, but you know, what's keeping him even in conversation is trade and the economy, and with stock markets, you know, being very, very high. If those things take a hit, his ability to stay in office for another 4 years is incredibly in question. And that even goes along with the person who the Democrats could even nominate, because I really think that Trump's really scared of Joe Biden. And of course, we'll see what happens when it all comes down to that. I mean, that's kind of why was trying to get this secret investigation with the Ukrainians with, you know, Giuliani. But anyway, presidents like to go into reelection campaigns with confidence, and they like to have this tough talk with adversaries from other countries. And so this is what he was really trying to say here is, hey, look. I'm going to be back, whether you like it or not. That's a rather hubris statement to make, but hubris is probably the least thing that we could call this president.
Yeah, I mean, tough talk aside, as you so elegantly quoted there, this is the thing about this whole stance that Trump has taken as of late over the weekend. It's not just of a president that is harassed. This is a president that is almost imperialistic.
Yeah.
And when I say imperialistic, let's just think about this, okay? Drew, if one of the multiple investigations right now into Donald Trump's overreaches and over accesses of power from the executive branch were to go in front of a very favorable Republican judiciary, remember, that's secretly what Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell have been building up behind Donald Trump this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
If the court were to side with the president on any one of these 20 open investigations, specifically right now, the ones going into his financial records, this could be the first step of the executive office superseding the rights of the other two branches. Imperialistic president. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, because we found out this past weekend about the president wanting judges to stop this whole national injunction type things. And I get this. I mean, again, the relationship with all the three branches is very ebb and flow, and that's never going to really change. However, what he doesn't like is when the courts give him a decision that he doesn't like. And, that's just the way things go. I mean, Obama didn't get every single decision that he wanted. Neither did Bush. Neither did Clinton. That's just the way that it goes. It's an independent judiciary. But what this president doesn't like is the fact that a single district court judge can give an injunction on one of his policies that will then stop it nationwide. What Vice President Pence was arguing earlier in the week was, that should only be applied to that particular case. Now, getting into the minutiae of federal court cases is rather boring. I'm not going to lie to you. But, that's a whole different, interesting judicial conversation that's being, taking place. I mean, academics and lawyers and judges, former judges, can always have that conversation. But the president wants to have that conversation in the Supreme Court. The thing about that is they'd have to have a case dealing with that particular thing in the Supreme Court. And look, the Supreme Court is an anomaly all within itself. And what I mean by that is they don't ever publicize why they take cases. They just either take it, you know, for a variety of reasons that they don't ever have to share with us. So we don't really know why they take case A and not case B. But understand this. There are those, well, particularly one in being Clarence Thomas, who wants to have that conversation inside that Supreme Court chamber. You might be able to also say maybe Neil Gorsuch wants to have that conversation, maybe Brett Kavanaugh. And if Ginsburg, kicks the bucket because that's the only way she's going to leave the Supreme Court, if she, you know, has to leave and then another Trump nominee comes in, you could probably see them having that conversation dealing with how far do injunctions go. And I don't really think that's exactly where the president should be, you know, concerned about. But, you know, he wants his policies done. He doesn't like the fact that one court case done by one judge in a district court can stop it all. So he's doing what he can to prevent that from happening, which is a great dot connector between what we see what's going on with the investigations that could possibly be stopped and all these other stories that we've been talking about so far. So for him to make a statement that is ever so bold really can usher in this type of imperial president. And that's rather scary for a country that has a working constitution.
I mean, let's not forget that it was, unfortunately, John Adams that had to come back from England with the very, I think it was King, was it Edward or George, who told him, let's hope that America never finds herself in want of a new king.
Yeah.
But it does seem like in the 21st century, particularly this error, that America in Donald Trump has found itself in want of a new king. Is is the British philosophy about America's ultimate destiny finally coming true?
This is a president who is so unpredictable. I don't know. He wants everything that he can have, including all the kitchen sinks, including all the hamburgers and all of the Diet Coke from KFC and McDonald's. He wants it all. He doesn't want to be stopped. Well, the thing is that so does every president. But presidencies have setbacks, and he doesn't really respond well to those setbacks. And that's a character flaw that he's not real comfortable in addressing. But hey, I'm not his therapist, and he quite frankly needs one. But let's just understand this, is that, you know, getting back to this whole king thing, he might think that he should be one. He doesn't like his authority being questioned, and he doesn't like it when his team screws up. And, well, this is something he's just going to have to get used to, which leads us to an interesting question. You know, if should he be defeated in 2020, what, you know, will he really not leave the White House? You know, his ego would be so struck by that. That would probably call into some particular method as to, you know, how do we get rid of a losing president who won't, you know, abdicate the office that is set forth in the Constitution. He probably views himself larger than the rule of law, which is a tyrannical problem.
You know, this the thing is that scarily, if you look at the system that he has invoked in his whole administration, it has been delegitimize, discredit, deny, 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 and then after it's all done, go ahead and distract, go on to something else, go find some sort of attack methodology to get people off of him. And the whole time that we have been distracted, we've had Mitch McConnell striking massive blows to the balance of power within the judiciary by fast-track appointing as many Republican far-right-lined judges into the judiciary. And this includes Let's not forget, they changed the rules of Senate just to be able to confirm Gorsuch and Kavanaugh.
That's right.
And if you don't think that this isn't going to have some sort of flip side to the coin, Cory Booker, in his kind of underhanded way, has already identified that, you know what, the real fight for in 2020, the Supreme Court. This mm-hmm. this fight has moved on beyond the presidency because this presidency has moved the office of presidency past the point of legitimate. Am I wrong here?
No, you're not. That's been a great tactic that I think Trump and a lot of his team have learned from the Nixon years, is to, whenever you are being attacked or whenever you feel like you're being attacked, you delegitimize the entire process and you distract. And that's just how this works. Now, let's also be fair to the idea that many presidents, whenever they're faced with something, some domestic problem, they would want to distract the public with some sort of foreign aspect. And that was one of Clinton's, going back to the late 1990s with the whole Lewinsky and impeachment thing. He was being criticized because, with the whole thing going on with Bosnia and using NATO troops, that he suddenly became a very popular president. And some say that was the whole reason to do that, was to, distract people away from the whole Lewinsky scandal. I totally get that. So what? But, that's, presidential politics. But understand that when that's constantly your go-to card that this president has done, we've kind of caught on to that. Well, those who are paying attention anyway. But let's understand also that, there has always been this interesting relationship with voters and the Supreme Court. And I think that is one of the main reasons that, even those who may not have liked Trump in 2016, who identified as being Republican, said, you know what? I don't want Hillary Clinton type of Supreme Court justices to really go. I don't want another Obama type of justice on the Supreme Court. So I think that's why they were like, you know what? I may not like Trump. I don't like his personality. Don't like his mouth. I like his Supreme Court nominees. He's got my vote. Mm. And Booker is very much correct on that. Is that, look, if there's ever a way to try to galvanize your base and get people out to vote, those who are really, really caring about it, they'll say, you know what, I may not like this person, I may not like some of the policies, but the Supreme Court is something that we really have to go for. And, presidential politics is sexy. People want to look at it. People want to pay attention to it. But there's another leash to it. There's another chain, and that's the U.S. Senate. And there's going to be several, about a third of the Senate will be up for reelection. And people have got to really pay attention to the fact that, yes, the president gets to nominate and appoint people to these judiciary positions, but the Senate has to confirm them. And Mitch McConnell was up for reelection here in 2020. So was John Cornyn. And these are all people high within the Senate political realm here. So if you are interested in changing how the Senate is going to look, you cannot allow the same people to really go back to it. And so, there's a bit of a push to get John Cornyn out of the Senate. There's a push to get Mitch McConnell out of the Senate. And we'll really see how this shapes up, because once you make the Supreme Court part of your argument, that's a very strong point as to whether you should be replaced or whether you should stay. And Democrats right now are pointing to an ad that McConnell has made about Merrick Garland and saying, yeah, we know all about Merrick Garland. You screwed him over. And he's going, I love Merrick Garland in his turtle voice. I love the fact that I blocked Merrick Garland. I love that, And so he made an ad about that. And look, it's going to be part of his campaign. You can't, and you could make the argument here that obstruction in both the Senate and the presidency is not a good recipe for governing. And so whenever you have those two running on the same ticket, this could be an interesting campaign in both Kentucky and for the presidency. I hope all that made sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, I understand that unpacking the Kentucky fried racist that is Mitch McConnell is usually pretty difficult, but the thing is that, look, there is, and I mean, I've seen the hashtags ditch Mitch McConnell, and I've seen all of the efforts behind it. But up until somebody actually reasonably comes forward and says, you know what? Here's the actual way, because Mitch McConnell loves lying in his ads back in Kentucky. Here's all the ways that Mitch McConnell has lied to you, state of Kentucky. This is not a national issue at the end of the day. I, in Hawaii, have no votes towards or against a Mitch McConnell. So at the end of the day, this becomes a state-level issue. So when you talk about 2020, Trump is hoping that all of the attention, like Tupac said, all eyes on me, he's hoping that strategy will lead to some Republican gain. But if you really want to pursue a meaningful process and you're a Democrat, right now, you're not really thinking at a federal level. You're thinking, let's talk about all of the tax money that could have come back to Kentucky and all of the educational funds that were diverted away from Kentucky thanks to Mitch McConnell. Let's talk about time and time and time again that he was against women, reproductive rights, LGBT rights. Let's just go on record with what he's done for the state of Kentucky, because at the end of the day, it becomes the states having to choose whether or not this federal stuff's going to make sense for us. Drew, we have to take a break.
Okay.
We'll be right back after this and talk more about Rudy goes to Ukraine. That's not a country, but it's up next. The Shaggy Chicken Show.
Is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. In case you missed any part of the first part of our show, shame on you. This is my accusatory finger, and I'm wagging it in your general direction. But you can always make it up to me by finding us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever. Find podcasting to serve by looking us up. The Shaggy Jenkins Show. We're also all over social media at Shaggy Live, and sometimes we're actually heard in parts of Texas. A guy that very rarely likes to hear what I'm saying, but somehow mercifully comes on this show week after week. Please give it up from West Texas, Drew Landry.
Ah, now, Shaggy, I love what you have to say.
Yeah, I hope so, because sometimes, man, it takes a kind of a freak job like me to come up with things that are just absolutely logical, but nobody has said the logical thing too. Like, here's one for you. How in the hell did nobody just lose their mind over the fact that Rudy Giuliani said, I'm going to go get the Ukrainians to help us in the 2020 election?
Yeah. You know, we should have been more upset about that. I mean, we really should have been, but you know, we're not. We're so desensitized to what has happened here in the past 2 years that, you know, that's why we're, you know, so, you know, we're so like, yeah, okay, he's going to Ukraine. But, you know, I think what we're finding here is that, you know, once he announced that, I mean, he actually made it public in an interview. Well, I'm going to go to Ukraine and I'm going to, you know, deal with an investigation or something. You know, just to unpack all this, you know, Joe Biden, his son Hunter, had a business that was dealing with the Ukrainian government. And Biden, when he was vice president, was calling for the investigator's resignation. And so, and not to mention people from other countries were saying the exact same thing. So it wasn't just Biden alone. And well, what it came down to was that, well, that person who was investigating the businesses was suddenly gone and no more investigation. So it was kind of like a lot of question marks, like, well, why is that happening here? What, you know, this is Biden. Did, you know, did he use his power and all this? And that, and nothing really came of it after that. So ever since Biden has, you know, gotten into this race, you know, they're trying to find more dirt on him. You know, let's just face the fact here. Joe Biden has been in politics for over 40 years, if not longer. I mean, he was elected to the U.S. Senate when he was 29 years old because his birthday is in December. So it was after Election Day, one of the youngest to ever be elected. So it's not like he's just new on the scene or no one's ever heard of Joe Biden. I mean, he's ran for president several times. And so it's not like he's never been on the center stage. So trying to find dirt on Joe Biden really shouldn't be that hard. I mean, a Google search could probably do you pretty good. But for him to want, you know, for Giuliani, who is the President Trump's personal lawyer, to want to go to Ukraine to find dirt on Joe Biden is really a head scratcher. And then all of a sudden he says, oh, I'm not going. Because President Trump told interviewers, I'm going to talk to him about his trip. Suddenly, no more Ukraine. I think it was pretty clear saying, you don't need to go to Ukraine. How about, I mean, there's going to be some other type of way to get in contact with him. I mean, Giuliani did admit that they were doing Skype interviews, you know, for the past year or so and all that sort of thing. So I don't think his involvement with Ukraine is going to stop. And here we are again. I mean, you know, here comes Congress saying, hey, look, you guys are doing this crap again. This is, you know, some sort of a obstruction. This is, here we are colluding with a foreign government to help you win. What's the deal? And I think this deserves a lot of explanation, but we're not going to really get it from this president or from Giuliani, who will then use this as a tactic to attack somebody and say somehow it's our fault.
You know, and this is the thing. You said that if anybody wanted dirt on Joe Biden, they could just go to Google, right?
That's what I said, yeah.
Have you ever Googled Joe Biden?
Not in the past week.
Something very interesting happens when you Google Joe Biden. You see, you Google Joe Biden, and here's the thing. In the transitionary period between November and January, when he was President Donald Trump-elect, there was a very popular series of memes that went around with Joe Biden and the Joe Biden meme. And this is the thing that I want to ask you. Do you think Rudy saw all of those memes of Joe Biden hiding keyboards and putting a Kenyan birth certificate in the drawer and thought that was real?
I don't think Giuliani has much of a sense of humor. So my guess would be, yes, he probably really did think that.
Like he went to Google and he typed in Joe Biden and he saw the one where Joe Biden was like, I'm going to pop him in the face. Joe, no. I got him. You know, and he's like, oh, my God, Biden is unhinged. And he said that under his aluminum foil hat because he doesn't know it's tinfoil that actually blocks the alien.
Yes, he gets all that really, really confused.
Really confused. Like, this is a really guy confused. That is, yeah, he's not all there. And that's kind of the whole point of this narrative. It would take a guy that was very confused about how United States politics works and international diplomacy as a concept in general, how it functions, to do the kind of action that Giuliani has went into, but this is a guy that time and time again has shown a willingness to jump through flaming hoops just to get Donald Trump reelected and out of the Mueller investigation lens.
Yep.
Can I ask you a question? What's in it for Rudy?
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of an appointment. I mean, there has to be something else more than just being his personal lawyer, right? I mean, that's kind of why you would want to stick your neck out for this. I mean, he's not going to, you know, Trump is not going to replace Pence on the ticket for Giuliani. Maybe an ambassadorship somewhere, maybe be the attorney general, maybe some other type of thing. But this is the ever so problem that I find with Rudy Giuliani is that in my heart of hearts, I want to believe that he knows better. I mean, Giuliani was a federal prosecutor. Giuliani has held elective office. I mean, he won, you know, he was mayor of New York for, you know, several years. I mean, he's ran for office. He is not a newcomer. He is not some guy who just graduated law school and just got the bar Well, made the bar. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. You know, I mean, there's a lot of times that when it comes to referring to Giuliani, I think, God, I wish that I was coming out of a bar hearing some of the news about him. It would make it make so much more sense. Like, you know, it's like if I blow a 0.27, I think at that point I should be able to comprehend just one of Rudy Giuliani's public statements. Because
yes,
this is a guy, like you said, former federal prosecutor, knows the ins and outs, is supposed to know executive overreach and privilege to a T. But this is a guy that is almost drunk with the power of being in Donald Trump's circle. I want to ask you a very legitimate question, and it's a question that a lot of journalists haven't brought up. But with all outward evidence of what's happening with Donald Trump, a very logical person would look at all of these things as a sign of being brought down, as it were, as ants outnumber a cockroach. The small little processes are actually going to overwhelm this great, massive, deadly creature that they want it to become. But when it comes to Donald Trump, his inner circle, his very, very inner circle, the tightest of tight circles that he has, and no, we're not talking about Melania Trump, the tightest of tight circles that he has, his co-conspirators in his cabinet, his legal advisors and people like that, not family. These are people that seem to be clinging to him as if there is some sort of disclosure of power or granting of wealth beyond what we in the public can perceive. Now, when it comes to that kind of thought processes, wouldn't it make sense, therefore, to deduce that the guys closest to Donald Trump know he's dirty and are fully invested in it for their own personal payoff?
That they have to be. That's the only reasonable response to it. Either that or they truly believe that he is innocent. There's really no middle ground here. Either they know that there's, you know, bad news around him, or there isn't. And so his inner circle is incredibly close. I mean, this is, I've said it before on this show, and I'll say it again. President Trump is more or less mobster-esque in the way that he does things. He has this very close circle. Chris Christie was one of them. And then he gave him advice on the Russia thing and said, no, this isn't going to end anytime soon. And then he's been out. He's on the outside looking in. You know, a lot of people that worked inside the White House are either been indicted or now in jail. Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. You know, these are people who are going to spend time in jail, and they were part of his inner circle. And so, you know, look, either he's innocent and they know it and they're fighting for it, or there's some payoff at the end to keep him from all these types of investigations. My inclination is to think that it's the latter as opposed to the former. And Giuliani knows this. And I don't ever think that Giuliani is stupid. I don't think he's the bumbling fool. He's too smart for that. And for him to want to defend the president as often as he does, off the cuff, with full carte blanche, no question about it, allegiance to Donald J. Trump, there is something in it for him. And I don't think it's, you know, to be, you know, rewarded some, you know, something monetarily. There's some power involved here should they win re-election in 2020. But then again, I should also be fair to all this and say maybe I'm the crazy guy. Maybe I'm the one who's looking too much into this. But from the evidence shown and the behaviorals that we've seen here in the past 3 years of this president, I have no other type of conclusion than to come up with what I just mentioned. I think he's mobster-esque, and I've got no other feeling about it than that.
You know, the thing is that Donald Trump does have kind of a Godfather-esque heavy hand control, and much like a mafioso-type personality, there does seem to be a power behind the power that nobody is really kind of seeing publicly. But this is the thing. When it comes to guys like Donald Trump, because I do kind of want to be able to at least squeeze in one of the four remaining stories we still haven't covered. Oops. But the thing is this story is so involved. It is so many moving parts. With Giuliani, this is a particular mystery because this is a guy who basically was anti-foreigner in the immediately aftermath of 9/11. And now he is saying, you know what? Those same people that in the aftermath, like Saudi Arabia, Russia, Iran, all those places that I said were supporting terrorism for the United States, I'm now taking trips to their country to ask them to help with our election.
That's right.
The only way, other than somebody knows something and they getting something on the back end of this, that this could not be true, is if, okay, either A, mind control slugs, which, you know, aren't real, but I saw it in episode of Star Trek once and in the movie The Wrath of Khan, so I'm going to go with that. Mind control slugs or human cloning. So, Drew, that's just the thing about my weird logic is that when you actually go down that little path down the rabbit hole with me, you realize that a lot of disqualifying factors, like historical empirical data, start to kind of show a counterintuitive picture of a modern individual given their pattern of history over the decades leading up to that moment. Something that defies a logical explanation other than an evolution of character that naturally led itself to this place. So if I was trying to have a natural evolution from America's mayor into we're going to go to the Ukraine to get my boss reelected again, what would you see other than mind control slugs and androids as being the logical conclusion between point A and point B?
Man, with only those two options, Star Trek's been right about a lot of technology. Not going to lie, you know. So, you know, you can't really diss a lot of what happens in Star Trek. So, you know, mind control slugs, you know, I wouldn't put it past it.
You know, and the thing is that, mind control slugs aside, is this very slimy public persona of Giuliani is so counterintuitive to our relationship with America's former mayor before. Now, he's like America's more hairy version of a Lex Luthor. He's in the public eye, he's prominent, but at the same time, we, from a casual observation of him, realize this is not a man whose character is out there for the betterment of us all.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, this is, you know, for him to have this weird transformation, it really make people really scratch their heads and go, how did he get from A to B? How did he transform from, you know, again, America's mayor? I mean, he was right out on the front on that, you know, after 9/11 and all that stuff. And I'll be honest with you, you know, he deserves some credit for that. He truly does. But he loses all that credibility now because of where he is and how he's just been a, you know, for lack of a better term here, lapdog for the president. I mean, he's, you know, any type of criticism whenever he goes on the Sunday talk shows or any other type of political talk, he is fighting. He is the attack dog for the president. And you bring out anything to the contrary of what's been stated or how or any other type of opinion, he's there to discredit. He's there to attack. He's there to legitimize the entire process. I mean, he's doing the will of the president. Now, you could say that's a good soldier, and if that's the definition of it, yeah, he's been a real good soldier for the president. But has that been a true service of his country? That's up for conversation, and I don't really think that he has. I mean, going back from what we know of 2001 to now, there's been a complete 180 of Rudy Giuliani. For him to want to, you know, actively seek help from a foreign government to win the White House, I mean, that is in and of itself collusion. That's open collusion. And he should be, you know, he should testify in front of the House, in front of this. You know, will he? Probably not. But he owes it not just to the American people, but he owes it to Congress for, you know, for them to have this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Because, look, when it boils down to it, Rudy Giuliani, I mean, I only thought that it was the genetics of the kids of cousin marriages that ended up with mental deficiencies. But apparently, Rudy Giuliani, who did marry, in fact, his cousin, does have kind of those mental deficiencies that I mentioned. The reason that I bring those deficiencies up is because from the pinnacle of his career, what we have actually seen of his personal reputation is a man that had a very embittered public divorce that led to a huge, huge scandal about his actual practices as mayor of New York. That led him to be a shamed politician who, I cannot stress this enough, when he tried to run for president, ended up with zero votes.
Yeah.
By the first round. This was a guy that was seen as the savior of New York, and by the time he went and ran for presidential office, anybody else would have been able to capitalize on that type of return. No, zero, and that's not a facetious number, actually zero vote. And after that zero vote, he kind of went back into private law. But if you look at some of the clients he's defended, including people like Purdue Pharma, who's tied up in all of the opioid scandal, and oh, by the way, he's been very adamant about how opioids is the fault of the users, not the overprescription, not the lying and misdirection by Purdue Pharma, and definitely has nothing to do with the fact that, oh, say, they still are lying about the long-term effect of opioids, even 20 years after they were released to the public. Now, with all of this known about Giuliani, like, you start to see a public facade of a man who is not an upstanding citizen. So why is it that when Trump tapped him to be his personal counsel, Trump's base was like, that's the guy you need? How can they overlook everything I already said?
Yeah, it's all, you know, my inclination is the fact that he's part of that inner circle. He is a Trump, you know, I'm going to defend you like you are Purdue Pharma. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm going to defend you on every level, and there's going to be something in return for him. I mean, he was, you know, when Trump came out that he was going to run, you know, Giuliani was right there saying, "Yep, I'm all in." And you know, it's kind of like this is so bizarre because you know I've akined Trump to mobster-esque. You know, Giuliani got credit when he was mayor for cleaning up New York. Now, that's been it's been proven to be a rather spurious relationship into how that's worked out. But the fact that, you know, he's taken down mob bosses and now he's rather working for one is ever so ironic and ever so hypocritical. You know, you have to wonder what's in it for him. What's he going to get? I mean, is he going to be the new ambassador to the Federated States of Micronesia? What's in it for Giuliani? What's in it for him? That's my constant question. That's what I'm often concerned with, is why would somebody who has been a federal prosecutor, who's seen bad guys do corruption, who's taken on the five families of New York, who's done, you know, things when it comes to crime and combating them, and has this record of being a public servant, why would he do this complete 180? What, you know, there's got to be some power involved here. There's got to be something in it, and it's whether it's money, whether it's power, whether it's some sort of board executive to, you know, to be in the Trump family, whether it's, you know, to be a star on The Apprentice when that comes back up again. Hopefully that will come back in 2021. And star Trump and Rudy Giuliani. But, you know, I don't know, because what you laid out there is ever so true. And, you know, it really makes you wonder, you know, why is he doing what he's doing? And this is, I've got nothing else to really add to it other than that.
I just have the strange theory that that video that we saw in the early 2000s of Donald Trump hitting on a then dressed in drag Rudy Giuliani had more romantic connotations than we are actually aware, and that is the reason that both of these gentlemen behave as they do.
Gross.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. And I mean, you know, that's something that, you know, in all of your years of wanting to ship people into relationship, nobody ships Giuliani into Trump.
No.
Nobody ships
them. No.
Okay.
No.
I want to go into one last story, because we've only got like about 3-4 minutes left in 3 minutes left in the show. Drew,
sure.
There is a whole fund on GoFundMe called Let's Build the Wall. It has amassed over $22 million, but absolutely, positively no wall. What gives?
Yeah. Look, these people put together this this GoFundMe for the wall. It got, you know, like you mentioned, $22 million. It's all privately funded. No government has been involved in this. They claim that they're working with the government. They're working with Congress people, working with senators, and they claim to have bought property, but no real construction has been done. The truth of the matter is that it's been done by a known scammer of these types of things. And so people who have donated maybe large amounts of money have seen no return on their investment. And guess what? They're mad. And they're notifying, they're emailing, and not really getting a whole lot of responses other than we're still working on it. Whereas this guy who's taken all the money has probably, you know, having a very nice time I mentioned the Federated States of Micronesia. Maybe he's on the island of Yap.
Yeah, I was about to say, I called up the Copa Nations because, you know, here in Hawaii, we are very close neighbors to them. And a lot of their citizens end up on our shores. They said, no. And if you know anything about the reputation of Micronesians, one-word answers are very foreboding. This is the thing about Brian Kolfage's whole plan. He is a triple amputee war veteran who, like you said, is probably Scrooge McDucking in all of this money, albeit in one long circle, but he is swimming in all of this cash because that is the only explanation for it not being available or public. And there's no public signs that anything has happened. There is no outward efforts being made to pass. And now, with all of the mounting anger against Brian Kolfage, how long before he actually is forced to come out and say, much like the homeless man, $400,000 scam, this was fake?
Yeah. You know, good question. I don't know when he'll say that. He may never say that. He may have just as the Steve Miller Band says, take the money and run.
Yep. And that's what we got to do because it's the end of our show. Drew, grab the money and run. And as for me, I'll be back tomorrow. Drew will be back next week. Till then, love you, mean it. Get in, bye.